بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا وحبيبنا حبيب إله العالمين محمد اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المنتجبين. Last night we discussed about nafs, the soul. And we said that nafs has two sides, two aspects. We have the lower self and we have the higher self. The lower self looks at the immediate needs and desires of the body. And the higher nafs looks at the divine, looks up. One aspect of the nafs looks down to the earth, and the other looks up to the heaven. And that's why human beings have always been having these two aspects of divine and earthly life. Now, here, as is quoted from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, he says that how we have to deal with ourselves to be aware, to not give in only to the desires of the lower self, of that aspect of the soul which looks after our bodily needs and desires, which is properly placed to look after us, of course. But we should not exhaust all our energy only for that. We should look at our other aspect as well. When Allah says, do not wrong yourself, do not do zulm to yourself, it means that you are actually using all your energy, all your blessings that we have given you. You are only using it for these worldly needs. You have other needs as well. You have the need to connect to God. Gradually, we may forget that. And we forget that the connection is lost. Nasullaha fanasiyahum. They forget God, God forgets them. That means the connection is absolutely lost. So what should we do that this connection is restored? It is not lost in the heat of our daily life and living. Now, so he says, Imam Ali Salam says, when you want to deal with your own self, interact with your own self, there are seven things that you have to bear in mind. The first thing is fear, khawf. Fear, of course, we said that we have fear of God, that's a different thing. Fear of your own self. Why should we fear our own selves? Are we going to harm ourselves? Are we going to somehow bring a hardship to ourselves? We know that every human being tries and strives to bring what is good, to attract what is good, and to drive away what is evil and what is bad. So how is it that we have to be careful, we have to be fearful that we do not attract evil to ourselves and miss out on the blessings which we may have in this world? Fear is when we give in absolutely to the lower self and forget our higher aspects. We only think about half, even not half, much less than that, of ourselves. And we forget the other bigger chunk of ourselves. And this is how we wrong ourselves. And this is what Allah repeats in the Quran again and again. Again and again, وَمَا ظَلَمْنَاهُمْ وَلَكِنْ كَانُوا أَنفُسَهُمْ يَظْلَمُونَ. We did not wrong them. They used to wrong themselves. They forgot the blessings. They didn't use the blessings. Now, there's a, in Surah Ash-Shams, there's a verse about nafs. You probably, most of you know it by heart. وَنَفْسٍ وَمَا سَوَّاهَا فَأَلْحَمَهَا فجورها وتقواها. I swear by the soul and the way it is created. This ma in Arabic may give two meanings to the sentence. It may be mawsula or it may be masdariya. If it's mawsula, it means by the soul and what created it. If it's masdariya, which I think here fits better, it means by the soul and the type of creation that we have given it. As we discussed last night, soul, human soul is a very complicated machine. Very complicated. And the strange thing about it is that, like God that we do not see because it's of a higher realm, the soul is also of a higher realm, and we cannot feel it. We identify it only with our body, with our mind, with our hearing, with our vision. We identify the soul with that. And that is why it's very difficult sometimes to realize that there is something above the body in our existence. Now, by the soul and the way it's created, فَعَلْ وَنَفْسٍ وَمَا سَوَّهَا, and by the one who inspired the soul, the knowledge of evil and good. فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَعْوَهَا. Then it says, قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ زَكَّهَا. Whoever purifies this soul, whoever looks after this soul, will succeed. وَقَدْ خَابَ مَنْ دَسَّهَا. Whoever betrays this soul will be disappointed. وَقَدْ خَابَ مَنْ دَسَّهَا. Now, the interesting thing here is that whatever we will see as consequence of what we do in this world later on is not a punishment that Allah is bringing upon us. It's all consequences of what we do. Just like in this world, you see, we do certain things, we see the consequences. With regards to the spiritual world, it's the same as well. We do certain things, we see the consequences. So we shouldn't think about God as someone who has created us, waiting out there for us to do a mistake and punish us. It doesn't work like that. It is not like that at all. And this is why Allah is warning us again and again, do not betray yourself. Do not harm yourself. And betrayal of the self, قَدْ خَابَ مَنْ دَسَّهَا. Whoever betrays the soul will be disappointed. The betrayal is that we actually limit that highly divine, spiritual, blessed being into the needs of our bodily desires in this world. So, where does this khawf come in? Why should we fear? When the Imam says, "Usulu mu'amalat an-naf sab'atun," the principles of interacting with your own soul, with your own self, are seven. The first is fear. Fear because the lower self tries to somehow bring all the blessings and all the faculties of the self limited into the worldly desires, into the immediate needs of the body. Be careful, do not do that. Now, how should we behave so that it is not done? It is not, we do not limit it. To be fearful of that lower desires or the lower self means that we always have to remind ourselves that we have another part which should not be forgotten. And that is the higher self, which is our connection to God. It should not be forgotten. And if the lower self tries to push us towards that situation which we forget or we abandon that higher aspect of our soul, then we have to say, wait a second, I'm not coming after you. I have other business as well. My only business in this world is not looking after my own body and my own bodily needs and desires or worldly ambitions. I have other ambitions as well. I have other aspects as well. We have to be fearful. And this is why we see, of course, we may go to very extreme in this, like what we see some ascetics and mystics have gone to very extremes. Not attending to bodily needs at all. I heard from some book that somebody quoting that in the old Christianity in monasteries, the monasteries, of course, you know, they were built outside in the country, outside the cities, so that the monks were separated, were secluded from others. And these monasteries had a very stinky smell because the monks thought that going to bathroom and washing themselves is attending to the bodily needs and they shouldn't do it. You see how we can go into the other extreme? Which is wrong, of course. We have bodily needs, we have worldly needs that should be fulfilled, but we should not forget that all these are means to some end. And that end is, of course, to connect to our divine aspect. To connect to our divine aspect magnifies us, makes us great, big. To look into our selfish desires, selfish needs, bodily needs, worldly needs, makes us small. Why? When you look at yourself and all your attention is attracted to your own needs, how big are we? We are very tiny. I mentioned before, how big is this earth? Probably some angels even don't know if they look at the map of the earth, even with NASA, they cannot find where earth is. It's so small, so small. Now, how many human beings have lived on this earth from the beginning of creation up till now? God knows. Who are we? We are no one. Now, if we want to only look at ourselves, we have somehow make ourselves small. We have limited the scope and scale of our existence. Now, look at the other side. If we look at the divine, if we look at God, we become big, we are magnified. We would connect to the ocean source of the creation, isn't it? So it makes us big. Look at this example of Iblis, Shaitan, the big Shaitan, Azazel or Lucifer or whatever they call him. Now, it's very interesting. He was worshipping God, and he went up to the level of angels and above, to the extent that when God addressed angels, he was included. Look how big he became. Then, when Allah said to the angels, this story is told for us to understand the wisdom behind it. When God told the angels, prostrate before Adam, because Adam is greater than all of you. It's for that soul, isn't it? It's that soul can learn knowledge, ma'rifah from Allah. Now, when he said prostrate, Shaitan said, I don't. Why? مَا مَنَعَكَ أَن تَسْجُدَ لِمَا خَلَقْتُ بِيَدَيْهِ. What stops you to prostrate when I commanded you for something that I have created with my both hands? Now, when I say I've done something with my hand, means, of course, I have done it directly. When I say with my both hands, means great knowledge, effort, everything has gone into it. Why did you not prostrate? قَالَ أَنَا خَيْرٌ مِّنْ. I am better. I. Now Shaitan is looking at himself, forgets about God, doesn't look up, looks down. Now, he's in a very high position. قَالَ اهْبِطْ مِنْهَا فَلَيْسَ لَكَ أَن تَتَكَبَّرَ فِيهَا فَخُرُجْ إِنَّكَ مِنَ الصَّاغِرِينَ. God said, go down. Here you cannot look at yourself because here is the place of the honorable ones, the big ones. You look at yourself, go down, you are small. And when we look at ourselves only, we are small, we are tiny, we are nothing. When we look up, when we connect our divine side to God, then we are everyone, we are big, the angels should prostrate before us. Even the angels, we are always connected to God. They are smaller than us. Look at yourself, you are small, you are nothing, you are worthless. Look at God, you are everything. It's beautiful. Go down now. Go down. Because he had gone to a very, of course, we are not talking about physical sort of place or environment. We are talking about spiritual rank. Go down from this spiritual rank. Here, as soon as you look at yourself, you become small, you have to go down. On the earth, now, about every single one of us on the earth, when we look at God, when we connect to Him, we are so big, so huge, so massive in our creation that everything would bow down to us. You know, I envy all the prophets, of course. We have to envy all the prophets. But one prophet I envy very much. Whenever I read his story, I say, oh God, what this man has done. What this man has done. Nabi Dawood. Ya Jamal, awwibi ma'ahu wa tayr. When he praises me, mountains follow him, birds follow him. He's actually controlling the whole environment, the whole existence. He, this man, this soul, this tiny creation is controlling now everything. Ya Jabal, awwibi ma'ahu. Wa alanna lahu al-hadid. And we made iron soft for him. Why? Because he was connected to us. Now, you disconnect to God, you become Pharaoh, all powers, you are no one. إِنَّهُ كَانَ مِنَ الْمُفْسَدِينَ He was one of the corrupt. This is how it is. This is how it was. So, fear. The first thing that we should be aware of when we are interacting with our soul is fear. Fear, because this soul is very, very elusive. Very deceptive. Self, the lower self, very deceptive. Oh, you need, of course, to look after your life. You need things in this world, then ambitions come. I have a house, I need another house, I want more than that, I want a better house. You see, everything is exhausted for the immediate life on this world. And what is sacrificed here is that higher aspect, which gradually, initially we may not forget it, but gradually we forget it. Nasullaha fa'ansahum anfusahum. They forget God. God makes them forget that. Do we really forget ourselves? Do we ever forget ourselves? What is it in us that we forget? That higher aspect, that divine aspect, we forget it. Nasullaha fa'ansahum anfusahum. They forget God. God makes that aspect to be forgotten for them. They live for a while. And then after that, everything is finished. They have to go. And when they go, they are not prepared. They are not prepared. You see, it is said that when we die, two angels come. Of course, it doesn't happen for everyone, but for some people. Two angels come. They try, well, we call them Nakir and Munkar, or Bashir and Mubashir, isn't it? For good people, it's Bashir and Mubashir, they bring good tidings. For bad people, it's Nakir and Munkar. They are horrible. Now, why angels should be horrible? Why? Angels are the purest, the kindest, the loveliest creatures of God. Why should they be horrible? They are not horrible. I am horrible. And I don't like to see them. These angels come to help us, to guide us, to say, okay, now that you have come to this world, we want to initiate you to see your higher level of existence. How wonderful this new world is. I'm sure any one of you know how wonderful is the world after this life. All of you would like to die just now. But we don't know, of course. Now, they want to initiate us. They want to take us. Now, we don't want to go. We don't know. We are not familiar with that type of purity. And that's why we feel tortured. We feel that it is terrible, horrible. We don't want to see these angels. This is how it happens. We forget our higher aspects. Okay, this is one thing. So the first thing that we have to be aware of is fearing our own selves, because our own selves are deceptive, they deceive us, they make us forget our higher aspect. إِنَّ أَخْوَفَ مَا أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ إِثْنَانِ. The Prophet, peace be on him, said, the most terrifying thing that I am afraid of, I fear for you, are two things. اتباعُ الْهَوَى وَطُولُ الْأَمَلِ. Following the hawa. Hawa is what? Hawa is these desires of the lower self. Following it. And long ambitions. Because long ambitions is an illusion. Deludes us. Long ambitions, we live for example, 80 years, 90 years, or whatever, but our ambitions is for 1,000 years. We deceive ourselves, isn't it? So, اتباعُ الْهَوَى وَطُولُ الْأَمَلِ. These are the acts of the lower self. We have to be fearful of it. One. The second thing. والجهد. The second aspect of our interaction with the self is striving, effort, struggle. We never ever should feel that this world is a place for respite, for rest. It is not. We are not created here to rest. And it's very interesting. This world shows to us again and again, day after day, that this is not a secure place. This is not a peaceful place. This is not a place of resting. And we are looking after peace and rest and security. And we don't find it. Because this is just a sort of bridge that we have to pass from. It is only a sort of a prelude to our real life. So we have to, here we have to try, struggle, move. We shouldn't give ourselves respite. We shouldn't give ourselves break, so to speak. Now there's one verse in the Quran. فَإِنَّ مَعَ الْأُسْرِ يُسْرًا. إِنَّ مَعَ الْأُسْرِ يُسْرًا. After hardship comes ease. Again, I tell you, I emphasize, after hardship comes ease. Now, if that is the case, put yourself through hardship, because the ease comes after it. But not here. No, don't look for ease here. There is no respite here. You see, when we are young, most of us, majority of people, I'm not talking about minority, we don't have things, we have to work hard, look after the children, then children, the school and everything. Then, when everything is in place, now our children are married, we have grandchildren, we say, oh, let us have a sigh of relief. Oh, disease come from everywhere, illness, pain, isn't it? This is not a place for rest. We are not created, is the Hadith Qudsi, says that to the Prophet, Ya Rasulallah, Ya Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, my abode are looking for rest in this world. I have not created rest for this world. It is for the place to come, the resting place. إِنَّ الْآخِرَةَ هِيَ دَارُ الْقَرَارِ The resting place is Akhira. You have to move. There are stages that we have to go. يَا أَيُّهَا الْإِنسَانِ إِنَّكَ كَادِخٌ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ كَتْحًا فَمُلَاقِهِ Oh man, you are traveling towards your Lord, stage after stage, until you meet him, then you rest. And what rest it is? They say, Paradise is Darussalam, the abode of peace. Now, we say peace. I tell you one thing, and I'm sure about it. You don't have the slightest idea of what peace is. None of us have. None of us have. Well, of course, we talk about peace of mind, peace of heart in this world. And we think when Allah says, Paradise is Darussalam, it's talking about this type of peace. This is not peace. Peace is something different. Peace is something which gives you huge pleasure. And that's why we think paradise is just a place like this world, just a bit better, greener, gardens, rivers, and then we say, okay, we go there to live for eternity. We get bored, isn't it? Because we compare it with here. We don't know when Allah says, there is abode of peace. We don't know when he says there is pleasure of mutual happiness between God and man. Radiyallahu anhum wa radu an. God is pleased with them. They are pleased with God. We don't know what that means. We don't have the concept for it. It's just like, for example, God talks about honey in paradise, rivers of honey, and honey in this world. We think they are the same thing. They are not. It's a different plane, it's a different creation. And whatever concept you have about peace, love, happiness, pleasure, is just a sort of tinge of what is going to be there. So, if this is the case, in this world is a world of struggling and striving. فَإِنَّ مَعَ الْأُسْرِ يُسْرًا إِنَّ مَعَ الْأُسْرِ يُسْرًا I emphasize, after hardship comes ease. Now, if, as this is the case, فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ As soon as you become somehow free of your daily tasks and responsibilities, put yourself in the struggle of connecting to God. Now, this فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ, the exegetes have given many meanings for it. For example, and these are just instances. For example, when you finish your salat, continue with dhikr and dua and such things. When you do one type of worship and finish it, do another type of worship. But I think the best meaning of this فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ, because all of us have daily business, as the Prophet had. As the Prophet had daily business, and how busy he was. He had to lead the community, he had to arrange for battles, he had to arrange for economy, everything. And then, of course, God says, after you have finished your daily business with all these things, which you do all for God, of course, he did all this for God, isn't it? Don't sit and put your feet up and have a coffee and rest for the rest of the night. Of course, we need some rest, of course. Half an hour rest. But for the Prophet, he says, no. Now, when you are finished with that, come to me. فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ وَإِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ فَارْغَبْ Now come to me. Come to me when? When you have no daily business. يَا أَيُّهَا الْمُزَّمِّلْ قُمْ فَأَنْتَ قُمْ اللَّيْلَ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا Wake up during the night. In night, you don't have daily business. Well, I need a sleep. I know you need a sleep. But this is more important. Come. إِنَّ لَكَ فِي النَّهَارِ سَبْحًا طَوِيلًا I know during the day, you have long days. You have to do lots of things. But do not think that you do business and you rest. No. You have to try, you have to struggle to gain what we have to gain in this world. You know, this 60, 70 years of life which is given to us, if we think it's just for pleasure and for having things and then leaving and going, it doesn't make sense. It's senseless, actually. But if we think we have something to do here and then go to the next stage, it makes sense. And that's why we have to always try our best. We need rest, I know. We need entertainment, I know. But as much as we can, to put ourselves under pressure to have spiritual fitness. You see how some struggle to have physical fitness, bodily fitness, you see? Spend hours for bodily fitness, isn't it? We have to have spiritual fitness. And that spiritual fitness needs time, needs striving, needs effort. Just like bodily fitness needs time and effort, spiritual fitness needs time and effort. Now, okay, God is merciful, God is forgiving. Yes, of course, it's all true. But the point is, the more you strive, the more you get. It's as simple as this. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq said to all his followers, I know all of you would go to paradise. However, try for the degrees. You are not content in this world with little. Why should we be content in the next world for little? Why should we say that, okay, Allah is merciful, Allah will give me. Do we do this in our business, daily business in this world? We don't do it. Okay, Allah is merciful, I just work 1 hour a day and then sit at home. No, it doesn't come. The same thing, even more. Because in this world, sometimes things happen in a very curious way. For example, someone who doesn't deserve suddenly becomes very rich. It happens in this. But in that world, it never happens like that. Everyone receives what they deserve. فَمَنْ يَعْمَلْ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ خَيْرًا يَرَهُ وَمَنْ يَعْمَلْ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ شَرًّا يَرَهُ Whoever does, the weight of an atom good would see it. Whoever does the weight of an atom bad would see it. So, striving is very important. Another aspect about interaction with our soul. So, khawf, jahd. Now, the third thing that which is mentioned in this hadith from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq is ar-riyadha, exercise. Spiritual discipline. This is very important. And this is spiritual discipline more to do with type of worship is to do with the attitude of the heart. This is very important. The attitude of our heart should be as such that we know what we are doing in terms of worship. We know what we are saying. When we say the dhikr, we know what type of connection we are establishing with God. Akhlaq is very important. Let me mention one story. You know, you have heard of Avicenna or Abu Ali Sina, the famous philosopher, physician, the prodigy of his time. Very huge man. Now, when he was young, you know, he had a very photographic memory. Extraordinary. He just looked at a book, just skipped through it, and memorized it. That's all. And he boasted with that. He wanted to say, all the time he wanted to say, I have read anything which is already written. Once he went to one of these Salatin, and someone brought a book. And the man said, have you read this book? He said, let me see it. And he said, oh, yes, I've read it. And he said, when did you read this? I have just written this book. No one has seen this before. He said, just I read it. And I can tell you whatever is in it. You see, this was the man. So great in his in his blessings that Allah had given him. Now, there was a teacher, he's famous as well, Ibn Meskway. He was more a teacher of akhlaq, and he was one generation, of course, older than Ibn Sina. Now, Ibn Sina was advised to go to the lectures, classes of this Ibn Meskway. He was 20 years old. And he sat there, what this man is saying, it's just common place, common knowledge, I know this. So after he finished, he had a walnut. He put the walnut in front of Ibn Meskway and said, can you measure, calculate the area of this walnut for me? And certainly Ibn Sina could do it. That's why he wanted to tell Ibn Meskway that you cannot do it, I can do it. To measure the area, to calculate the area of this walnut. It's very difficult, isn't it? Ibn Meskway said, come with me. And he went to the other room, gave him a book. Ibn Meskway had written in Akhlaq and Ethics. He said, you know, I don't need very much to know the area of that walnut. But you know, you need to know what is the way of behavior in front of a teacher. Read this book. And Ibn Sina went and read that book, and he actually apologized. He said, yes, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. This discipline, discipline ourselves, the way we have to behave with others, the way we have to behave with God, the way we have to behave with ourselves, it's very important. And it is something that when we actually come to the interaction with our soul, finds very high importance. The other thing that Imam alayhi salam says in interaction with the soul is وَطَلَبُ السَّدْقِ وَالْإِخْلَاصِ. Before that, talabu sadqa wal ikhlas, seeking honesty and sincerity in whatever we do with ourselves. Well, honesty with other people is very good, but unless we are honest with ourselves, we cannot be honest with others. Unless we are sincere in whatever we do, we cannot be a good person in our society. Now, before saying that one of the important things in that discipline that we should have with ourselves is the way we talk to God, the humility which is needed for our interaction with God. And when I say humility or humbleness, I don't mean social humbleness. Social humbleness is very good. But sometimes social humbleness brings up arrogance inside, isn't it? Oh, what a humble person I am. That's very good. That brings arrogance. No. This is, of course, something that you have to beseech, that God instills in your heart. That when you talk to God, you realize, you remember that you are His make one. You are His make. Whatever you say, whatever you do, whatever you offer comes from Him. Second. And third, you are nothing. This is very important. One sentence someone told me, if you want to be somebody, be nobody. It's very important. Very important. Especially in the spiritual world. Especially in disciplining yourself, your soul. If you want to be somebody, be nobody. If I think I am somebody, in real world I am nobody. That's why Amirul Mu'mineen says about these sincere men of God, he says, in this life on the earth, people don't know them, don't know their value. But in heavens, among the angels, they are well known. They are prominent people. They are celebrities, so to speak, among the angels. But Here on this earth, they are nobody. They don't know. People don't know the value of what is in their heart. So, if we have that humbleness and those things that I said, when we want to interact with God, first of all, we are His make. We have to remember this all the time. We forget it. And that's why when we start talking to God, we think that we have been eternal, He has been eternal, and two eternals are talking to each other. No, we are His make. Second, we remember that whatever we do, whatever we have, whatever we offer is from Him. And third, we are nobody. Now, when we have this, then that ikhlas for Allah comes. Sincerity and honesty. Unless we have those qualities in our heart, we are not honest with God. We are deluded. We are in deception. So, honesty and sincerity. This sincerity can produce things that no one can ever imagine. No one. We have this hadith, Man akhlasa lillahi arba'ina sabahan. Jarat yanabi'ul hikmate min qalbihi ala lisani. Whoever can, of course, this whoever can is a sort of challenge. That means very rarely anyone can do this. 40 days, you live sincerely with respect to God. You be sincere to God. 40 days. The springs of wisdom would gush out, would flow from your heart onto your tongue. And then you say things that other people never have heard. You yourself are amazed how knowledge comes from within. Because all knowledge is in our soul, isn't it? وَعَلَّمَ آدَمَ الْأَسْمَاءَ كُلَّهَا Allah taught to Adam all the names, all the knowledge. Knowledge comes from within. And as I said, the Quran is a reminder of that knowledge, reminds us of that. So, you be sincere, you see what comes out. Now, we know that certain things that the Prophet did or said were revelation of God. The Quran is revelation of God. There are certain hadith that Prophet have said they are revelation of God. But if things are not revelation, if what Prophet did was not revelation, for example, he didn't receive any revelation with regards to his daily practice on several weeks, for example, which was the case. Should we follow that or shouldn't we follow that? Well, we are told, the Quran tells us, لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ The Prophet is a good role model for you. أَتِيُ اللَّهِ وَأَتِيُ الرَّسُولِ In the same way that you obey God, obey the messenger as well. Obey God means obey the Quran. Why obey the messenger? In those areas where he does not receive revelation. Why? Because he has what? That wisdom. That wisdom has come. And that wisdom never makes mistake. That's why we say they are ma'asum, isn't it? That wisdom doesn't make mistake. We think, when we say someone is ma'asum, we think that God has tied their hands and tongues so they cannot do anything wrong. No. It's the wisdom which would not allow them to make mistake, to go astray. That is what makes them to become ma'asumeen. So, talab al-sidq wal-ikhlas, if anyone can, now, can you, I tell you, the wisdom is not flowing from my heart to my tongue, you can see. That means I haven't been able to sincerely worship God for 40 days. It's very difficult. But if someone can do that, to reach this stage, there are 12 stages before it that we have to go through to reach this stage. And for that, life is short. Life is short for these stages. We have to progress. But anyhow, this is very high, very sublime. we don't need to reach this place to be close to God. Lower than this also is accepted. Lower, less closeness to God is also accepted. But this is what ikhlas would do to a person. If we completely put ourselves at the service of God. Now, one hadith, and I finish this part. This hadith is in Al-Kafi from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. With regards to this verse in Surah Mulk, هو الذي خلق الموت والحياة ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا. He has created death and life. If anyone can tell me why death comes first before life, after I finish, just ponder on it. هو الذي خلق الموت والحياة. He has created death and life. ليبلوكم, to try you. أيكم أحسن عملا. Which one is better in action? And of course, when God tries or tests, He doesn't want to know the result. He wants you to go through that process of making. Okay, so ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا, to see who has the best act, and based on that, place him where he or she deserves, based on that. Okay? Now, قال Imam عليه السلام said, ليس يعني أكثر عملا. This ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا doesn't mean those of you who have more acts. For example, I have prayed 1,000 rak'ah more than you, or I fasted 1,000 days more than you. ليس يعني أكثر عملا. This is not what it meant. ولكن أصوبكم عملا. The one who has the rightest action. The one which hits the target. What act hits the target? وَإِنَّمَا الْإِصَابَةِ خَشْيَةُ اللَّهِ وَالنِّيَّةُ الصَّادِقَةِ والحسنة. This isaba, hitting the targets, comes when you have khashya of God in your heart. And this khashya doesn't come unless you are humble, unless you know that you are nothing, you are no one. If you know this, then that khashya comes. Khashyatullah wa niyatu sadiqa, honest intention for whatever you do. والحسنة, and doing acts of good, charity, whatever. Doing good to people. You know, we may do good to people all the time, but it may not ease our way to connect to God. Why? Because we have already disconnected ourselves. If we connect ourselves to God, then every charity, every good act would help, would ease us, and would raise us. If we disconnect, then it wouldn't. So, إِنَّمَا الْإِصَابَةَ, this isaba, this hitting the targets, doing the correct thing, is when you do this with the spirit, with خَشْيَةِ اللَّهِ وَالنِّيَّةُ الصَّادِقَةَ, an honest niyyah, وَالْحَسَنَةَ. And if you have that, now let's come to our discussion about Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Say salawat. You do that, the reward comes without calculation. Without calculation. إِنَّمَا يُوَفَّى الصَّابِرُونَ أَجْرَهُمْ بِغَيْرِ حِسَابٍ. The patient will be given their reward without calculation. I don't say you have done, for example, two hajj, this is the reward for two hajj. You have done jihad, this is the reward for jihad. No, it's not like that anymore. There is no counting there. You connect to the source, to the treasures of God. And it comes and comes and comes. Like what Allah did to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. You see? Of course, it was one day of hard battle and troubles and grief and pain. But because he did it with النية الصادقة, honest intention. How many of us can go to jihad, for example, with honest intention? Of course, we may go to jihad, become martyrs, okay? But, and martyrs have a high place, but not with that intention which Imam Hussein had in heart. So, many people have been martyred, not 1400 years ago, maybe 14 years ago, well, maybe 100 years ago. We never remember them. It doesn't come forth, you see. It doesn't go to the hearts. But when someone does something for God, only for God, and you may say, okay, all these people who, for example, all the companions of the Prophet who went for jihad did it for God. But the level of honesty is different. The level of niyatu sadiqa is different. When someone does it for God, then of course, over the history, people cry. Why do we cry for us? We ourselves, we don't know why. You know, it's something which is very strange, very complicated, mysterious. Why? We are not a blood relative of Imam Hussein alayhi salam or anything which may cause our feelings to arose for Imam Hussein. No, but it comes. Why? Because God wants to reward Hussein, first of all, to appreciate what he did. And then through these tears to reward us as well, because now we are connecting. We are connecting to sincere people. And but through them we are connecting to God. And look how many people have been guided throughout the history because of the incident of Karbala. How many people have repented hearing this story? This is the barakah and blessing which comes all the time. When you do one thing for God, God never forgets, never. Never ever he forgets any good thing you do sincerely for him. Our problem is always, our intention is mixed. If it's not mixed, 40 days you continue with not mixed intention, then you will see what comes from there. For Imam Hussein, of course, it was like that. And for his companions. And for his companions, they became eternal with the incidents, and Muslims, believers, remember them and revere them, respect them, because of course in that day they decided to go with Hussein and become his companions and offer their lives for him. Now, two companions of Hussein from Banu Asad, they were prominent people in Kufa. From Banu Asad, you know, Banu Asad, they had some inclination towards Hussein, but among them there were very evil people as well. Like who? Like Harmala. Harmala ibn Kahil al-Asadi. He was from Banu Asad, who threw the arrow to Ali Asghar. So he was from Banu Asad. Habib ibn Mazahir, or Habib ibn Mudahhar, or Mudahhar, whichever way we pronounce it. He was a young boy when his family migrated from Yemen to Medina. He was 14 years after Hijra, they migrated. When they come, he was about 9 years old, something like that. So he had met the Prophet, so Habib was a companion. And you know, companions of the Prophet at that era, years 50, 60, because many of them had passed away already, they had great respect. Anyone who was a companion of the Prophet had great respect. He was a companion of the Prophet for a short while he was young, of course, and then he was with Ali ibn Abi Talib all through. He was in Safin, in Jamal, in Nahrawan, in all battles of Amir Rumi, he was with him. And he was living in Kufa, and when Muslim ibn Aqil came to Kufa, of course he went forth to, he wrote letter to Imam Hussein to come to Kufa, and he went forth to receive him. At that time, he was 75 years old. You may say, how a 75 years old go to battle? Now, I tell you something even more strange. His friend Muslim ibn Usajah, he was also from Yemen. They had migrated to Medina, and at the time he was 81 years old. He was 6 years old, 6 years older than Habib. Now, after things went wrong in Kufa, of course they supported Muslim, they fought and they tried hard, but of course they were defeated. They went into hiding, and when Hussein approached Karbala with a very complicated sort of arrangement, they fled Kufa to go and join Hussein. You know, Kufa was surrounded with soldiers because Ubaydullah was in fear that people may go and join Hussein alayhi salam. So he didn't want that to happen. So these two and their families, with very complicated arrangement which is mentioned in the history, they managed to flee and just penetrate through this siege and go towards Hussein alayhi salam. They joined Hussein. Now when they arrived, of course, Hussein was very happy to meet them because he knew them since long time. Hussein had lived in Kufa himself for a long time with Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam, and these were companions of Ali. Hussein had seen them in Safin, Hussein had seen them in Nahrawan, Hussein had seen them in Jamal. Of course, he was present all this way. So he was very happy. Now, Habib told him, Ya Hussein, do you allow me? My tribe is living close, Banu Asad. They are living very close. Do you allow me to go and bring some force so that my tribe could join us and fight? Hussein alayhi salam said, of course, you go. He went, and because he was very influential in his tribe, he actually mustered the majority of his tribesmen who were there, and they came to join Hussein. Of course, unfortunately, on the way they were intercepted by the army of Ubaydullah. As I said, they were everywhere. And they put up a very good battle, and they were defeated and went back. So they couldn't come, but Habib, of course, went through again and joined Hussein alayhi salam. Now you see how dedicated these people were. How dedicated. Now, one very beautiful stage was on the night of Ashura, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam gathered his very limited number of people and said, these people only want me and they don't want you. And it's now night. You can flee and go. I withdraw my bay'ah from you. You have no pledge to me now. Go. And he said this to all, to his family members, to Abbas, to Ali Akbar, to Banu Aqil, and to his companions. Now we know what Abbas said, what Banu Aqil said, but the beautiful thing was what these two men, these two old men said. One was 75, one was 81. You see, the interesting thing is that this 81-year-old Muslim ibn Usajah was going to die in a couple of years, isn't it? Yeah, just as an ordinary man, dying and buried somewhere and forgotten in the history. Now, just for that moment of battle, he has become eternal with the eternity of Hussein alayhi salam. You see, sometimes the decisions we make, how, and we think that it was bad that he was killed. No, it was very good, isn't it? It was good for him, very good for him. He became a great martyr of Karbala, and people go to Karbala every year, millions of people greet him and cry for him. So, when Hussein alayhi salam said that these people only want me, because Yazid didn't care about the bay'ah of these people, of companions of Hussein, or about others. He only wanted the bay'ah of Hussein alayhi salam. And you know that we are only a limited number. We don't have power to fight them tomorrow. So there isn't anything but death. I take my pledge, go. Now, from among the Ashab, the first man who stood was Muslim ibn Awsaj. He said, should we really go? You know, if I knew that I will be killed, raised for 1,000 times, I wouldn't have left you. This is Habib al-Mazahar said this. Now I know it's only one death, and it's very easy. One death is very easy. And I am not going to leave you. Muslim ibn Aws just said the same thing. And one thing, tomorrow morning, on the day of Ashura, they said to Hussein alayhi salam, they came to Hussein. Of course, he put Zuhair, Habib on his Maysara, the left wing of the of his army. Of course, it was a very little army, wasn't it? And as commander and other prominent companions, they came to Hussein alayhi salam, and they said, this is our last day, of course, but we ask you one favor. Hussein said, what? They said, we ask you the favor that until we are alive, none of your family members should go for battle. Because we want to say to the Prophet that we defended your family. He defended your family. If while you are there, any member of your family is killed, then it is a shame for us. So we just want you to arrange this battle in a way that as long as we are alive, no one, no member of your family should go to battle. And of course, Hussein alayhi salam honored that. Now, this Habib was known for his knowledge of the Quran. He was one of the reciters. And when we say reciter, we don't mean reciter in the sense that we have now. Reciter was someone who had memorized all the Quran with correct pronunciation. You know, at that time, the Qurans didn't have diacritical marks. Zamma, Fatha. You didn't know how to read it. There were no dots. For example, yaf'alun, yuf'alun, taf'alun, how to read it without dots, without marks. And someone who was a reciter, he knew exactly what every word should have been read. He was one of the reciters. He was a man of hadith. He was a man of fiqh. And that's why when he passed away, when he was martyred, when he fell, and these two, 75 years old, 81 years old, they fought as young men. It's very strange what power they had on that day to fight just like young men. And when Muslim fell, Habib al-Mazahir went on his the place where he was lying down, and he had some breath still. And Habib said, if I was not going to follow you soon, I would have asked you to make will, whatever you want. I would have fulfilled it. But I know that I'm going to come after you soon. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ غَضَى نَحْبَهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ يَنْتَذَرُ. Some of them have fulfilled already their pledge, and some are waiting. Muslim said to Habib, I have a will, and I want you to do that will for me. What's the will? I'm going to follow you soon. He said, I want you to protect Hussein until your last breath. You see, he was dying. And he said this and passed away. And when Habib fell again in a very outstanding fight he did put on, when he fell, Imam Hussein went on his body and said, Rahimakallah ya Habib, laqad kunta qara'a. You really were a knowledgeable man of Quran. You knew how to read the Quran. And it is reported that the distraught, the break which happened for Hussein alayhi salam on the body of Habib ibn Mazahir did not happen for any other companion. He was so close to Habib, And inshallah, Allah will bless all those souls and would bless us for remembering this event. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
Send our grievances to the awaited Imam of our time. I'll open the floor for Q&A. I'm sure there'll be some questions, comments with regards to this evening's deliverance. You all have heard about the 12-step program, right? That's what he's talking about, the 12-step program. And what hits the target is a question that is now up to each and every one of us. How do we get it? It's got to be a shortcut somewhere, Saeed.
Hopefully, inshallah. I haven't found it.
And you're sitting over here. I'll open the floor, please. Questions? Comments? Yes. Can we get a mic sent to the sister over there in the back, please?
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Okay, my concern, it's not concern, but it's just a clarification or maybe extension on innamal usri yusra, innamal usri yusra, right? Mm. Now, the thing here is what I understood is there is relief after grief. Mm. And the way it is in the world, that there is light after the tunnel, right? But in Islam, the light is there as you go through the grief, if you can find it. But what you have told us today, that we look for that light in the later life. And I thought that this particular ayah is for us here in this world to bear the hardships that we may have to go through in our lives.
Well, you are talking about light.
Yes.
I didn't talk about light, of course. Light is always accompanied by your struggle, okay? The peace, comfort, and composure that we seek in this world would not come through. The light, of course, is the light we have to take in this life. It doesn't come later. And in fact, in Surah Al-Hadid, when some munafiqun ask the believers who have light, "Unzuruna naqtabis min nurikum," wait for us, I get some light from you. "Qil arji'u wara'akum faltamisu nura." They are told, go back to the world and bring light. So light goes from here. What I meant by that is that comfort that human being is after in this world, it doesn't come. That comfort is not created for here. It's created for after. But of course, light, we have to learn it and find it in this world.
Yeah, but the comfort after the grief, isn't that also comfort if it's not light, if it's in the form of comfort? Where do you find?
We can say, actually, the Exodus say that the verses which comes before talk about sort of Yusr coming after Usr. Alam yajidka yatiman fa'awa. Were you not an orphan and God protected you, gave you protection? Wa wajadaka rallan fahada. And you were lost, whatever the meaning of this verse is, there are lots of discussion around this verse. And he guided you. Wa wajadaka a'ilan fa'aghna. You were poor. He enriched you. فَإِنَّمَا الْأُسْرِ يُسْرًا. So, if there is hardship, then there is ease. However, that's a very relative ease. We know that Prophet never had ease during his life, all the time. It was relatively easier, but of course hardship and difficulty was there. The real ease and comfort comes after this world.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. It's from the sister out in the back there, please. Yahya, you're next.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
You were quoting our Imam, sixth Imam, in Al-Kafi. Al-Kafi. And you said he has created death and life to try you. And you're going to tell us why death before life.
I expected you tell me. Anyone did have any thought about this? Why death is mentioned before life? هو الذي خلق الموت والحياة. Yes, if you want to say something? You want to say?
Real life is after death.
Real life is after death, yes. Real life starts after death, the same answer, yes. Anything else?
Only living people know what death is.
The death do not, well, they should know better than us because they have already died. Yes.
I heard somebody say that we are born to die. The minute you are born, you are ready to die now. You are going towards death.
Yes, yes. Actually, if there was no death, this world, this plane of creation, would have been meaningless. So, first Allah had put a sort of destination for this world and then created it. And for human being, set a destination for human being and then gave him life. So death was destined before life was given. This is what I understand. Because life on this plane, I'm not talking about the eternal life, life on this plane without death has no meaning. And of course, the answer is given that real life comes after death is another way of saying what I said, what I mentioned. Does that make sense?
Yes.
No? So, please. Yeah. Who said no?
Just, yeah, here.
You want to come over here? Who dared to say no?
Get the mic over here, please. Just one moment. I've got somebody here. Slide up. I'll be back.
Assalamualaikum. You were saying in yesterday's majlis that the soul and the body work together, and then when we sleep, it says that the soul leaves the body, and then it comes back when you wake up. So what happens to the soul during that time, and then when we dream, how do we remember it in our body? Like, what exactly happens? How does dreaming work, and how does it all relate?
You want me to answer all those now?
The Cliff Notes version.
Yeah. Well, certainly when the Quran says that Allah receives the souls when they die and in sleep, and then sends back the soul of the sleeping person and keeps the soul of the dead person, we know by experience that still some part of soul or some degree of soul is in the body. There's some degrees of soul which are taken, some degrees are left there. And that's why we breathe, we live, it's the soul. However, those part of the soul which give us consciousness, thinking, judging, they are taken away. Now, they are taken away in a way that, well, when the Quran says God takes it, we don't know how, we don't know where, but we know that there is a connection of that part of the soul with the world of Malakut. That's why sometimes we can see dead people there. They can tell us things which may happen in the future correctly. You see, it happens. And also, we can see things that we decipher, the soul deciphers it in our mind. That's about the dream, the true dream, because we have different types of dreams. Some dreams are just based because of our physical, for example, ailment or discomfort or something like that. But the dreams are connections the soul would see things which have no words for, no concept, because they are going to happen in future. They are very different from the things that we see in this world in through the time. So the soul looks into the mind to find a concept, to decipher what it has seen. And that's why dream needs an interpreter. I see knowledge which I never have seen in this world. I cannot explain it. Then the soul searches the mind and finds ocean close to that what he has seen as a concept. And then we think that we see an ocean. Okay? And that's why, for example, the interpreters say that if you see an ocean, it means that you are seeing knowledge. Or if you drink milk, for example, this is how they have correlated the deciphering of the soul of what they see, which is very different, have no concept to explain, with what is in the mind. The soul searches for the closest concept to describe what it sees in dream. And then, for example, in the case of the king of Egypt, he said, I saw seven fat cows eaten by seven thin cows, and seven fresh ears of wheat, and seven withered ears of wheat. Now, the interpreters, who were very, of course, expert in their knowledge in his court, you know, of course, the king wouldn't bring just an initiate to interpret for him, especially if he's giving salary in the court. They were very expert. But in this case, قَالُوا أَضْغَاثُ أَحْلَامٍ. These are just a broken sort of imaginations of the soul. There is nothing, there is no interpretation. The soul is not, has not connected to anywhere. This is what they meant. قَالُوا أَضْغَاثُ أَحْلَامٍ means the soul has not connected to anywhere. It was just something which was produced by probably physical cause. Now, when they took it to Yusuf, Yusuf had a better connection there, and he could interpret. So this is how the soul encounters things in Malakut, has no word for it, has no concept for it, deciphers it through the concept which already exists in the mind, and the interpreter will interpret it for us. Yes.
I think one of the ladies had it.
No, I got my answer.
Oh, okay.
The last one. Sheikh, why did Allah not put all the human beings into Jannah straight away instead of bringing us in the earth and putting us through all this?
Ask him. No, because it was not possible. You know, Allah put Adam, who was the purest human being, in a place similar to paradise, not paradise of course, similar to paradise. And you see what happened. It was not possible. We have to go there after a process which would make us stick and stay there. Otherwise, if we are created the way we are in paradise, we wouldn't stick and stay there. We just fall down.
But then he's made human beings, you know, some very strong, some very weak, some are not well, some are... They can't perform in the same way as, you know, everybody expects them to be performing. I mean, you know, there are different stages in Jannah as well, like different degrees.
Yes.
Some person in the life, in the world, if he's not very strong, he's not very strong in mind, and he can't connect with Allah that much, is he going to go to the lowest level in Jannah?
Yeah, lower level, yes, yes. Because Jannah needs lower levels and higher levels. The totality of the creation of God has slots. All these slots should be filled with people. And that's why people are created differently. Now, those who go to hell, they fall. But those who go to paradise, they and Allah will create as much, as many people as all those slots are filled in. And then that totality would create a beautiful thing that we cannot imagine. Now, of course, anyone given less blessing in this world, their account, their process, their journey towards God is easier. La yukallifu Allahu nafsan illa wus'aha. Allah would not burden anyone more than their power. Waladayna kitabun, and we have a book. Yantiqu bilhaq, of course, book doesn't mean this physical book. Yantiqu bilhaq speaks with truth about every person. How long did they live? Isn't it? I mean, why some of us live 30 years, some of us live 90 years? The difference is huge, isn't it? Three times the other. I mean, if these both of them are very good people, the one who has lived 90 years can gain three times, isn't it? Can gain three times. And if they are evil, both of them, the one who lives 90 years can harm himself three times, isn't it? So, now, but لَدَيْنَا كِتَابٌ, there's a book with us, talks about every person, how long they lived, where did they live, where were they born, what was their family, their environment, their culture, in what religion were they born. All these will be taken into consideration. It's not a sort of simple thing. We say that, for example, you are born Muslim, you go to paradise, you are born non-Muslim, you go to hell. Of course, this is our sort of simpleton mind which thinks like this. Allah never think like this, or never act like this. It's very, very systematic, it's very complicated, and of course, He knows why these many people should be created. I mean, God, isn't it enough? Haven't you created enough men and women? Okay, let's have the Qiyamah. No, He knows how many should be created until that spectrum of beauty that He has in mind is complete. And then, of course, every one of us should be given that the slot that we deserve. Now, you can ask, I mean, the horses and donkeys can ask, why didn't God, you created us as human beings, isn't it? Why did you create human beings like this and us like this? Because they have to fill their own slots, and we have to fill another slot. Now, the more blessing is given to us, the more responsibility, the more thank, and the more appreciation.
Anybody else? Yes. Can we get the mic out in the back, please? Sister, if you could just, there's only so much lead cable on that. Thank you.
Brother, is soul and conscious the same thing, one and the same?
Consciousness.
Yeah, consciousness and soul.
Consciousness is one aspect of soul. Yes, of course. Consciousness is very much related to our physical organism. Yesterday we talked about it, that the soul has no means to know anything in this world or to do anything in this world unless through the body. And the body, of course, consciousness could be attributed to mind rather than to the soul. And then when, of course, mind works properly, we are conscious. And when we are conscious, the soul can work through the mind and can work through the body. So it could be attributed somehow to both of them.
It's like conscious is always the true, the guiding light inside you.
Conscience. Are you talking about conscience or consciousness?
No, conscience.
Sorry. Conscience. Yeah. Okay. Conscience is... is that knowledge of good and evil that God has given us. And of course, what we mentioned yesterday was one rank of the soul which we call an-nafsul lawwam, the blaming soul. That is when our soul, instead of just thinking about it, the desires and needs of selfish body, would think about higher things as well. Then the conscience is working, and that is one grade, one degree of our soul, one aspect of our soul.
one question.
Yes. Let's get a mic over here, please. Please.
You started this series of lectures by talking about the four aspects of worship, not just the prayer and dhikr, but reaching out to humanity. And we had a brief discussion of picking and choosing certain mustahabbat, so we have a balance in time. But today you seem to emphasize the spiritual discipline to be more of the dhikr and making the link to Allah through that. Wouldn't the link to Allah also come from being there for other human beings and worshipping Allah that way?
Yes, it does. As I said, the hadith, which I explained briefly at the beginning, there are four aspects of human interaction. Interaction with God, interaction with nafs, interaction with people, interaction with the world. Now, there were seven principles for our interaction with God. Seven principles, which I just discussed, four of them, with interaction in with regards to interaction with our soul, and after that comes interaction with people. That's another aspect. We cannot actually limit human being in any of these one aspects. All should go together. All should go. I cannot say because I'm good to people, I'm a perfect person. No. You are good to people, this is just one aspect of your perfection. Then you have to have your good interaction with your own self, which we talked about, disciplining, honesty, striving, fear. Then good interaction with God. And then about the world, that's a different topic which we'll discuss inshallah later on. So maybe tomorrow night, inshallah, we will come to the type of interaction with people. To be there for others, as you mentioned. Yes.
Anybody else? We had a concern that say Bamanpur was concentrating more on this side of the year, and the sisters were saying they were not getting enough time with him, so to allow him to spend a little more time, if I may request, Iskander, would you help us with the ziyarah, please?